Production support for Soundbites is made possible by listeners and by Coffee by Design, growing a business committed to community and sustainability locally and worldwide. CoffeeByDesign.com.
Welcome to Soundbites, true stories told by local Mainers and nationally recognized storytellers. The themes are always changing, and the hosts are from all over the nation, but when you hear the name Soundbites, you're in for a unique storytelling experience. Soundbites is brought to you by Frontier Studios and made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing Company, Frontier, The Press Hotel, Toad & Co., and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. This week's stories were told live at Frontier in Brunswick, where the event's dedicated theme was Birthright. Here's today's host, Detroit-based storyteller Dame Wilburn.
My mother, Alberta Wilburn, was born June 4th, 1945 in Macon, Georgia. As a small child, she would climb under her neighbors' houses and steal their moonshine, not to sell it, but to drink it. She would play basketball with the bigger boys, the older boys, and if they dared say she couldn't play with them, she'd beat the hell out of them. And then she'd play against them and beat the hell out of them some more. As a girl in high school, she dated Otis Redding for a while. She dated Maceo, who was James Brown's band leader. My father hated Otis Redding to the point that if Try a Little Tenderness came on the radio, he'd unplug the machine. My mother went to see the movie Carmen Jones. And in that movie, Dorothy Dandridge wore a very tight, pencil-tight red skirt. My grandmother was a seamstress, and she made that skirt for my mother. And my mother was walking down the hall in high school, and my dad saw her walk by, and he took his fingers, and he thumped her right on the ass real hard. And my mother turned around and hit him in the face so hard that his knees buckled, and he dropped to the ground. And the legend says that the people standing around him, he said to them, if I have to walk my legs off up to my hips, I'm gonna marry that woman one day. My mother was formidable. It's a word we don't use a lot anymore, but she was the kind of person that suffered zero fools, even if they came from her. Probably especially because they came from her. When I was in high school, I wasn't the kind of kid who would steal or rob. I wasn't the kind of kid who stayed out late at night. I didn't drink, I didn't party. I was a good kid. My talents lend a little bit more towards, you know, basic fraud, falsifying documents, a little bit of racketeering. So my mother and I had a very interesting relationship because she had been a 4.0 student the entire time she was in school. She was the first African-American woman to coach basketball in the state of Georgia. My mother was formidable, and I had none of her skills. I was just a regular kid trying to get through a regular life. She didn't even think I was a regular kid. In middle school, she put me in a Detroit Waldorf school. I was the only kid on my block that had weaving homework. And when I was little, she'd say, Damien, dare to be different. But no parent really means that. They want you to be different in a way that's productive. And I was just different. This sort of weird childhood and weird high schoolness led me to an all-Catholic college in Adrian, Michigan called Siena Heights. It's a university now. But back then, there was about 500 kids on campus. And I knew I needed to go because somebody needed to call me and say things like, you weren't in class today. Now, one of these days, I was in my senior year. Well, let's be truthful, I was in my second senior year. Okay, let's really be truthful. I was in my second and a half, I was in my fifth senior semester. And I'm in the library doing some research, and my friend Daniel comes into the library and says, "You have a visitor at the front desk." And I said, "Who is it?" And he said, "Well, they asked to be a secret. They want it to be a surprise." I said, "Well, I got to finish my paper." He said, "Yeah, they know, but they want you to come into the front desk." All right. So I get up all my stuff, and I go walking towards the front desk. Now, that hallway, when you came out of the library, all the school was connected. So we're coming past the cafeteria. We're coming out of Archangelus, and I turn right to go down the hall to Ledwidge. And sticking out into the hallway is a winter white, leather, lattice-worked, 4.5-inch concave heel Timothy Hitzman pump. And I look at Daniel and say, "That's my mother." And he says, "How do you know it's your mother?" I said, "Because my mother paid more for that shoe than your parents paid for your car. I know it's her." And I come around the corner, and she's sitting in this chair. She is smoking a more menthol underneath the no smoking sign. The poor little child working the security desk didn't have the balls to say nothing to her. I'd been her child for 20-something years. I agreed with his decision. She is ashing into a little piece of toilet paper that she made him go in the ladies' room and get. And she's staring at me, and you know, I walk up to her. She came to see me. She's on my turf. I'm 24 years old because I should have been out of college at least 1.5 years ago. And she looks me in the face and says, "Imagine you in the library. I didn't even know you knew what the hell it was." I'm like, "It's nice to see you too, mother." So we have our exchange, and she decides that she wants to take us out to dinner. Me and my, as she calls them, little friends. So I go up and drop all my stuff off, and these other two people with me are trying to walk away, and I'm like, "Oh no, you're going to share this joy with me. We're going to go out to dinner with my mother." So my mother starts, she orders Jack and Cokes, rum and Coke, 2 at a time. The waitress wants to say something. She puts a $100 bill on the table. The waitress doesn't say shit. You can have whatever you want. It's a Red Lobster in Adrian, Michigan. Whatever you ask for, you can get. My friends are ordering food for 2 other days, and my mother doesn't care because she's going to put it on her gold card. And at no point has she told me why she showed up. I still don't know why she's here. We get back to the dorm, and she gets into my room, and I say, "I have to work on this paper." And her first comment is about my dorm. "This is really nice. This is really clean. If you could have kept your room at home clean." I'm like, "Did you drive 1 hour and 15 minutes to talk about my life, or do you have a point?" She doesn't say anything. She turns on my TV and says, "Why don't you only get 3 stations? I said, "Because you're not paying for cable." Doesn't say anything. She goes into the community bathroom. This young girl is in the bathroom, thinks that she's another college student, and unfortunately engages her in conversation. That poor child is probably still traumatized to this day. One of the campus resident hall officers tried to tell her not to smoke in the hallway in the dorm. I never saw him again. His ghost is probably still haunting the hallway. And at some point, she fell asleep. She's laying in my dorm bed because I was in a double that year. And I'm watching her sleep. And this fierceness that I've been afraid of my whole life seemed to just go away. And she looked like a little kid, just curled up, like she'd been carrying the burden of the world on her back. And that was the first time she laid it down. She was doing what we used to call her Georgia sleep. It's the way she would fall asleep, but she'd go home and get in my grandmother's bed after my grandmother had passed. She'd hold her pillow and take a deep inhale, smell her in the pillow, and just pass out. And we wouldn't be able to move her for days. She'd drink alcohol, watch TV. She might even eat a little something if you brought it to her, but she wouldn't leave that room. And that's the way she was laying. The next day I go to class, turn in my paper. I come back to the dorm room. She's on her second pack of more menthols. I asked her, "Did she bring 2 packs with her?" She said, "No, I sent one of the little boys to go get me a pack of cigarettes." I said, "This is a college campus. What little boy did you send?" She said, "I don't know, some little white boy walking down the hallway. He needed to make 10 bucks. I said, "You can't be pimping out my friends." She said, "Oh, I believe I can. I believe I did." Fair enough. So she gets dressed. We get out to the car. She looks at me and she says, by the way, you need to get rid of that damn nose ring if you're ever going to get a real job. And I hate how you cut your hair. And I say to her, I love you too. And she gets in the car and drives off. The next time I saw her looking like that was the day she died. Now, you got to understand, this is a woman who once sent a pink slip to a man in a coma and made his wife sign for it and said to her, I want you to know that I believe he's going to get better, but when he gets better, he doesn't have a job. This is a woman who punched her husband on the third day they met and told him, if you stop asking me, if I say I'll marry you, will you leave me the hell alone? That was how she accepted his wedding proposal. This is a woman who in 1970 walked down the aisle in a Baptist church in Macon, Georgia, in pants. My mother was formidable. She did not give a damn about your opinion or anybody else's. She laid on that couch, slipping slowly into the other world. And she looked at me, and one of the last things she said to me was, you think I was an awful mother, don't you? You think that I was terrible, and you're going to go out in the world and tell people that I was a terrible mother. And I looked her in the face and I said, no. I'm going to go out into the world and tell them you were formidable and you made me the same way. Thank you.
Dame Wilburn is Chief Marketing Director for Twisted Willow Soap Company. So if you ever go to Detroit, you're looking for your Twisted Willow soap. She spends her free time writing poetry, singing, and working on her first book. She says that she is married to the most beautiful women, plural, in the world. And this is really exciting. And for this, you gotta carry some super amazing applause, because literally, and Dame told me about this in the car, it was kind of like top secret, but literally, as we've been doing this tonight, an amazing announcement was shared by The Moth. And this woman behind me is the new co-host of The Moth Radio Hour.
If you want to know more about today's storyteller, well, you're in luck. Let's join our host backstage, now in conversation with today's teller.
What's your most favorite or least favorite thing about Maine?
My most favorite thing about Maine is the resilience of places like Portland, where it, you know, sometimes the industries that build you aren't the ones that stay. And I love the fact that the people wouldn't let go of the town. And no matter, you know, as it comes up and it moves and it does what it does, the people who lived here and owned it and worked for it still hold it and hold it dear. And if all of that goes away, they're still going to be here. And I feel a kindred spirit like that being from Detroit. My least favorite thing about Maine is the fact that I don't think you understand the price of lobster. I think you think it's cheaper than it is in the rest of the world. And I think that's giving you a false sense of hope.
Fair enough. Who would you most like to share the stage with?
This is a complicated question because I have a lot of things that I'm interested in, but I would love to sort of talk to Diego Rivera and just see his process and see how his mind worked. And I think that to me is a stage kind of thing. And I'd also would love to just sing next to Otis Redding, just to be in the presence of that voice and that space and that kind of energy that, you know, it's pretty much Otis Redding and Wilson Pickett, and then there's nobody else that's doing it like that. Even James Brown wasn't doing it like that. So those are my answers. I would love to just sit in a room where Lin-Manuel Miranda is breathing. I would love to just be in the back of a church to hear Aretha Franklin practicing. I don't even want to hear her sing. I just want to hear her practice. I would love to have heard Mahalia Jackson live. I had the wonderful opportunity to hear Etta James sing live, and I would love to see her again. I got a chance to meet Roberta Flack and to be on stage with her while she was playing. I got a chance to see Chaka Khan in Detroit, and she had a killer show that night. And so I've got, I mean, the list is long and varied because I've got a chance to meet a lot of these people and some people I didn't get a chance to see. And I'm just like, I would love to have seen you.
So switching gears, do you listen to yourself when you're telling a story afterwards, after you've told the story? Do you listen to it, or why or why not? And if so, how soon?
I have a tendency to go almost into a fugue state when I tell a story, and I try very hard to be in that space of where the story is. So a lot of times I'll tell a story and I don't know what I said. I don't know what made it to tape and what didn't. So sometimes I will listen to the story almost just to remind myself, well, what did I say? And it depends. There are certain shows, you know, you feel the story lands, you feel the people, they're in it, they're with you. Yeah, I want to hear that performance. There are other times when it doesn't land, they weren't with you. Yeah, I'm not interested in listening to that. So, and usually for me, it's probably about the next time I have to tell that story is when I go back to listen to the other one.
Do you have a nugget or a detail that's connected to your story, but that won't make the cut, won't be in tonight's story that you're telling?
The university that I was in when some of this took place, I don't think I'm going to touch on this in the story, but it was run by the Adrian Dominican Sisters. And at one point during my time there, I considered becoming a nun and, joining them as a sister. And, that would have been fascinating, I think, for me to be a nun. It'd be interesting to see how this track would move in my life if I ended up being a nun. But yeah.
I imagine you'd still be telling stories, too.
Well, that's the basis of the Bible, is the parables. So, I mean, it's a story. And I think that's the way I learned. And I went to a Waldorf school, Detroit Waldorf school. So they teach through story. And so I've been listening to stories my whole life. And that S in the middle of my name, my middle name is Scheherazade. So I'm actually named for a storyteller. She's the one that told the 1001 Arabian Nights. That's the princess that tells the stories. Yeah, that's my middle name. So my mother named me after the most famous woman storyteller in the world. So there it is. Born into it.
Thank you very much, Dame. Soundbites is brought to you by Frontier Studios and made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing Company, Frontier, The Press Hotel, Toad & Co., and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. Special thanks also to GWI and Downey's Pension Services. More information about Soundbites, including how to attend a live storytelling event, can be found online at soundbitesme.org. And of course, you can always hear more stories at mainepublic.org. Thanks for listening.